in something like, let's just say, 7 weeks.
Right.
Okay. And you end up getting a designation letter in 17 weeks or in 17 months or in some cases not at all.
You can go about your business and not pay, you know, not pay taxes.
No, you cannot.
Sure you can.
So what you hear from Republican organizations now, and Chris, I don't know if you've heard this, but after the IRS actually exposed the names of some of these people, that these names were not supposed to be, people are actually afraid to give money because they don't believe that things that
Rick,
are actually
secret.
Rick, you're missing the point, Rick.
I think, Rick, you lose credibility if you don't acknowledge.
The White House is, you know, compared to Watergate, the White House, what is they? How many hundreds of thousands of pages have they handed over to the investigators? Nixon wouldn't even hand over, you know, subpoena things that were, you know, germane to a direct criminal investigation, as you know.
Oh, I'm not defending Nixon.
No one's defending Nixon. I'm indicting the media.
Well, that's what I was trying to do. And
I'm not defending Nixon.
The media would like nothing more than a juicy scandal.
So
that's what they live for.
You don't think it's a scandal, but my question to you was really, do you think, since I think most of the media takes your position, that's why it hasn't been investigated. If the Washington Post had taken that position around Watergate, wouldn't Nixon have survived the term?
No, because the FBI was investigating, and the FBI was really the organization that adduced all the information, and they had a pretty strong record by the time, you know, the trial happened. And as you recall, not to get into the weeds, once the security director for the RNC, you know, sent a letter to the judge saying, "Look, I was bribed into testifying the way I was." The McCord letter, then it was pretty much the cat was out of the bag.
But the media's role in pushing any agenda, regardless of what happens, in regards to a political situation, elevates it.
Right, but the media actually avoided a Watergate. There wasn't an article about Watergate on the front page of the Chicago Tribune until the end of August 1972, when the break-in was in June.
I think that is an important point, and I don't suppose that Charles is overlooking that point. I mean, I happened to be out of the country in 1972, so I missed this personally, but I caught up when I got back. There were months and months in which the Watergate matter was not covered, even in the Washington Post, and was ignored by
the New York Times. That's right, and that's why Nixon was able to get this, you know, enormous landslide, 60% of the vote.
Well, it helped that he was running against George McGovern.
Right.
Well, that was the conspiracy, right? They knocked out all the other candidates that they thought were competitive candidates, you know, by basically creating these. Word on the radio.
Was Teddy Kennedy knocked out by?
Teddy Kennedy just didn't want to run.
He didn't want to run.
Right.
Why not?
But they did tail him.
What sunk his chances?
Well, they say nobody died in Watergate, but that's not exactly true. There was one congressman who committed suicide because.
Then there was our congressman out here. I mean, who was coming back with the information? Congressman Charles Collins died. Remember, there was the guy on the plane.
We should get on that.
Well, it wasn't the congressman. The congressman was on the United flight flying into Midway, and on that plane was a Watergate-related figure, and that plane went down on the south
side.
It was
with $10,000 in cash in her satchel.
Hush money.
Yes.
Of hush money, and she went down on that plane. And that
it's all in the book.
That's it. All right. So, okay, one other quick. We've got a couple more minutes. We're talking about the invisible bridge.
Right.
And it is out from
Simon
and Schuster. So it's available out there. But Charles is part historian, part political scientist, and Misha reads history. Give us one of your historical points.
One of my big historical points is we're sitting around the table talking about this loss of confidence in America, all these enormous problems we have, economic problems, polarization, you know, I would bring up global warming, certainly, you know, jihad, government incompetence, all these things. And yet every politician, in order to kind of be able to kind of be taken seriously, has to stand in front of the microphone and say, almost ritualistically, America is the greatest country in the history of the earth, right? And what my book is about is how that kind of almost officially enforced optimism kind of became
a civic religion
in America, and how that keeps us from kind of addressing our problems in a kind of mature way.
Don't you think that this kind of civic religion is out of favor, actually,
no, not
among
at all.
well, let me complete. Sure. That the civic religion is out of favor among the sort of Lexus liberals, the Prius driving people of the North Shore.
Is Samantha Power one of those? Because in the book, I talk about how when she had her confirmation hearings, and one of the senators quoted her saying, "We need to really look at the problems in America's foreign policy in the past." And Marco Rubio said, "What kind of crimes are you talking about?" And she had to say, "America has nothing to be ashamed of. We're the greatest nation in the history of the United States."
The fact is, when revisionist historians were trying to rewrite the history of the late 1940s, what they did that biased much of their judgment was they looked at politicians who were speaking to the Detroit Economic Club, and those politicians said, you know, we really ought to do more work to sell automobiles abroad. What the heck do you think they're going to tell the Detroit automobile? What do you think Samantha Powers is going to say to these people?
Okay. Misha, a point before we break?
My only point was going to be, looking at American exceptionalism, I think that our nation was designed to have that. I think that still, despite what's going on now, we've seen great, great progress within the United States on a various amount of things. Of course, they're not exactly where we want to see them, you know, holistically, but we've seen labor movement, we've seen the civil rights movement, we've seen all of these great things, LGBTQ movements, and those things have really taken hold in America, and I think that it's very important for us to recognize that in relation to other countries before we step out of that exceptionalism nature.
That's Amesha Cross. Prior to that, Charles Lipson, and of course, Rick Perlstein, author of Invisible Bridge, will be back after these words.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Beyond the Beltway, and I'm Chris Roebling sitting in for Bruce Dumont. Thank you for joining us. Our panel tonight, Amesha Cross, Rick Perlstein, and Charles Lipson. We asked for calls a little bit ago. Our phone number here is 312. I'm sorry, no. I'm going to give you the 800 number. It's 800-723-8289. 800-723-8289. We're talking a little bit about Reagan, but we've also talked about developments nationally this week, like Ebola, like the Secret Service, like the new jobs report, and the new unemployment figure. Jim is listening to us on WLS in Elgin, Illinois. Jim, your words.
Good evening. How are you?
Good, thanks. Your bottom line point, please.
Well, first of all, that figure 5.9 is made up because they're not taking into account there's a lot of people that are looking for work. There's something like 90 million people that aren't looking for work. And I had a question for the Cook County lady. What's your role?
She's in the communications office.
Okay. Well, Cook County is very famous for not creating a good business plan because the commercial property taxes are twice as high as the other counties in Indiana. They keep raising taxes on everything, so people go to Indiana and buy gas and cigarettes and things and don't go to Illinois, and all these jobs are being migrated out.
All right. Jim, thank you. You're on, I think you're on a cellular connection that's kind of coming in and out, so we're going to say thank you, Jim, for calling
thank
in.
You.
Amesha, what do you want to say about property tax classification?
Yeah, to our national audience.
To our national audience. I think Jim's asking about job creation in general.
You know, I'll have something to say about this when we talk about the different electoral races. Right. I'll talk about Kansas, but we can get to that when
the county is doing a lot in Cook County specifically in terms of job creation. Across the county, specifically looking at the west side and the west suburbs, which have the largest unemployment in the county in general, most of that is because of the large recidivism rate. Right. So making sure that there are job training skills and that individuals have their core reading, math, and all those elements in place really matters. Cook County also has the largest African-American population of any county in the United States.
Really?
Yes.
Whoa.
Which makes it exceptionally great, you know, for me specifically. I love being black. There it goes. But in addition to that, it makes it a bit of a challenge in the sense that nationally, African Americans tend to have lower graduation rates on the high school level as well as lower graduation rates on the college level. That equates to a lower job employment ranking because we're in a century where it's very difficult for you to find employment when you don't have those degrees.
So there were two questions. Thank you. There were two questions that were asked by the caller. The first had to do with unemployment rates. And unemployment rates there are a number of ways to measure them, and the most commonly reported one, that came out with 5.9%, does not count you if you didn't look for a job. We've now got the lowest percentage of people who are looking for jobs in the last 30, 40 years. About half of that is structural, an aging workforce. About half of that is that the change in the nature of the economy. A lot of the people who are on the West Side, as Amisha well knows, were people who could have gotten a good job just because they were strong enough to work on a loading dock, and those jobs aren't there. They could have worked in manufacturing. On the other issue, which has to do with tax rates, the basic problem is that states with high taxes no longer deliver better services than states with low taxes.
Ooh, I want to talk about this.
Well, I want to get into that, too. I think that...
It's a very interesting situation going on.
We want to get to Kansas, but just let me pose it this way. I think underlying Jim's question, and no one nationally cares about property tax classification in Cook County. We understand that. But Jim's point was higher and higher taxes. So let's just deal with that.
Indiana is doing a great job cutting back.
Let's talk about this. We have Sam Brownback, the governor of Kansas. He said, if you elect me, I'm going to turn Kansas into a conservative showplace. I think I even wrote down the quote. He says, my focus is to create a red state model that allows the Republican ticket to say we have a different way it works. He immediately slash taxes. He did all the things like rejected the Medicaid subsidy and privatized delivery and dissolved state agencies and cut state jobs and tax cuts and ending income taxes for business profits. And his think tanks said that tax revenue would shoot way up, supply side economics. Tax revenue is down 11%.
Voodoo. Yeah.
His approval rating is 30%. He did exactly what our caller says, that if you lower taxes, all the jobs will come back into your state. No. The Colorado's job growth has been 3.5%.
And the comparison.
No. Colorado's has been low.
Kasich has done a good job in Ohio. Mitch Daniels and now Mike Pence.
He said, "I'm
going to
create a laboratory situation."
Scott Walker has done a fine job in Wisconsin.
I mean, Sam Brownback, who I don't know, you know.
Well, he's only been a senator for.
I understand, but I don't know him personally. I'm just saying he may have been right. He may have been wrong. But let's just assume the truth of the underlying proposition, which I'm not claiming to know. That's one guy screwing up. You've got a lot of other states, for instance, Tennessee, Florida, Texas, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, every state that is relatively and that's a very important point. It's not just absolute. It's not the Kansas situation. Half of the Kansas economy is hard by Western Missouri. Uh-huh. Half of the Kansas economy, the East Kansas economy, is right by Missouri. And so it's a very competitive situation. And what you're doing with taxes has got to be done on a relative basis, not just on an absolute basis.
Well, the taxes are higher in Colorado, and they have much better job growth.
The problem.
Right across the border.
Amisha, the western border.
Really? Go ahead.
Amisha.
No, I was just going to say, if you're going to compare in terms of Midwestern states, you also have to look at the fact that we have this humongous elephant in the room, which is this pension crisis. There's a lot of work going on right now to address that.
And we are going to be back to talk about that work after a break at the top of the hour. My name is Chris Roebling. I am sitting in for Bruce Dumont. Charles Lipson, Amesha Cross, and Rick Perlstein have joined me for the first hour. Thanks so much for joining us on TV. If you're on radio, we'll be back in about 6 minutes. Thanks so much.
Svengoolie has been clearing the air lanes for a long time. Celebrate with MeTV, WCIU the U, and the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Friday, October 10th for an evening with Rich Coes, celebrating 35 years as Svengoolie. See the new Svengoolie exhibit, meet the man, and dress up for a costume contest. For tickets and more information, go to museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Brought to you by MeTV, the U, and these sponsors.
This is Beyond the Beltway with Bruce Dumont, except tonight you've got Chris Roebling sitting in for Bruce, and we're coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in beautiful downtown Chicago. Our toll-free number is 1-800-723-8289. Our panelists tonight, Charles Lipson from the University of Chicago, Rick Perlstein, who just published The Invisible Bridge with Simon & Schuster, and Amesha Cross, a communications specialist and activist here in Cook County, Illinois. That phone number, again, we want to hear from you is 1-800-723-8289, and we also take questions at our website, www.beyondthebeltway.com. Well, folks, welcome back for hour number two. We are going to talk a little bit more now about what's happening in the fall election. We've covered Ebola. We've covered the Secret Service. We've talked about the incompetence of government. And we also talked about the competence of Rick Perlstein as a historian, as a contemporary historian. Now, let's talk a little bit about the elections. Rick has kind of kicked this off by getting us into Kansas, where there's a very interesting Senate race going on, in addition to this domestic sort of statewide fiscal issue related to deficits and tax rates and things like that. But as of today, this is Sunday night, October 5, we're about a month out. Is the Senate headed into the Republican column? Let's start with Amesha. Just give me a yes or no, and then we'll get into it.
Depressingly so, I'm going to say yes.
You're going to say yes. Rick Perlstein is a historian.
I think probably yes, but it doesn't matter because we have a supermajority run Senate.
Okay, and now Charles Lipson?
I think it's about a 60 or 70% likelihood that Republicans win by one or two seats.
Okay, 60 or 70. So we've got three who are kind of saying, all three of you are kind of saying, you're looking for it. There's more of a chance of it happening. Amesha, why? What is it? Is it because of a series of local issues in the states that are at stake this year? Or is it because someone out there, maybe even Republicans, although goodness knows they can't run most campaigns, that Republicans may have nationalized this election and created some sort of traction at the national level that's applying across the entire country?
I think it's more so local and state issues that are beginning to take form and people are getting more upset and aggravated. In addition to that, I think that there have been some key missteps in the Obama administration. And coming from a Democrat, that's a really hard thing to say. But I think there have been some key missteps in the Obama administration that have pushed people more to want to see something different. And that's really hurtful. And it's one of the things I think his administration has noticed in the sense of who he's out campaigning for, because he's seen that that's not necessarily helping those candidates. Him and his surrogates going to different states in terms of campaigning on that for the Senate as well as the House has not been highly effective. And a lot of people are questioning the Democratic Party right now, even those who have consistently voted Democrat in the past.
Charles Lipson, you gave it 60%.
I thought your comments were right on, Mark. The one area I want to sort of push back a little bit, Misha, is that I actually think that what's striking, given how many, what a large percentage of the country thinks we're on the wrong track and so forth, a sluggish economy, maybe it's turned up a little bit recently, and so forth, is that it's not just the slam dunk for the Republicans. This is not a national election. To the extent that it is localized, that they're running about Kansas issues, they're running about North Carolina issues, that helps the Democrats. The nationalized election would help the Republicans. It looks to me like what's happening here is that the Republicans will take Georgia and Kentucky, the two states that they were potentially vulnerable in. It's very hard to knock out an incumbent, but the ones in Louisiana and Arkansas do look very
Kansas.
Vulnerable. The one in North Carolina looks as if she has fought her way back, Kay Hagan, and will probably take that. South Dakota, West Virginia, those all look clear Republican victories. But the fact that you get these states that have either been right on the edge, even Democrat, Republican, or voted Republican at the national level and are not so clearly in the Republican camp for the Senate strikes me as telling us that local issues really are more important and it's hard to knock out incumbents.
Well, I mean, I think kind of going back, you know, several decades now, we've had a very fickle electorate. I mean, basically, you have the football kicked back and forth every 2 years. You know, we're in an off-year election, and the incumbent party is going to get knocked back on its heels. We haven't really seen too many strong trends, really, since the 90s. I mean, you know, like, you know, Obama will win, and then the Republican Party, people will be, you know, playing taps on their bugles, and then, you know, the Tea Party happens.
So let me ask you a question, Rick. One way of interpreting this, with the exception of the Obama reelection, is that all the elections have been throw the bums out.
Right, exactly. We've
seen that a lot.
Right.
So it really helps not to be the incumbent.
Right. But at the same time, incumbency has profound advantages. I mean, sure. When you're a congressman, dialing for dollars is your job, and that's a lot easier to do from, you know, the Cannon building than from, you know, some Kansas.
Wait, they're not allowed to do it from the Cannon building.
As
I know you know, they all go to the Democratic committee.
Across the street.
Three or
the
four
Capitol
blocks
Hill
away,
Club
or the Capitol
yeah.
Hill Club across the street.
But I
stand
think
corrected.
That right now we're looking at something that is very interesting in terms of the level of incumbency advantage. And I think that that's because a lot of people have grown weary with politics as is. They've grown weary with the jobs process. They've grown weary with not being able to see, you know, any rates increase at a normal level in terms of housing foreclosures and things like that. People want to see change. And having an incumbent who calls, who's got people on the mailers, who's doing all those things helps in terms of being able to raise money, but it's not necessarily translating into the, oh, I'm a shoo-in because I'm an incumbent.
Well, I mean,
we're seeing that in Illinois. Nobody thought Durbin was going to have a run for his money, and look at what that's happening.
Does Durbin have
that
would
close.
Be national.
No, it's 15 points. But
well, I think it's not necessarily 15 points.
It's not 15 points.
And for people around the country, we should say that the Chicago Tribune had a major takeout this morning on Loretta Durbin, Mrs. Durbin's lobbying activities and whether or not they create overlap with
You'll be
Senator.
Shocked to find the spouse of a high-ranking public official is able to make a living, as every Biden relative has,
I want to say that this was the I do not remember this level of coverage of Loretta Durbin's private business activities before in the
Has Durbin responded? Either of them responded yet?
They were both quoted extensively in the article, and there was a photo in the article, which I think was so they were well aware of the story's pendency.
His point, though, is that he is campaigning heavily in areas that he's never had to campaign in before.
Okay.
And if you were to ask most minority voters who Dick Durbin was, what his policies were, they would not be able to answer you.
Rauner's a strong candidate?
I think Rauner's a really
strong Rauner, now you're shifting gears, because Rauner's running for governor. Durbin is a senator. So,
oh, I'm sorry.
The candidate running against Durbin in Illinois for people around the country is a guy named Jim Oberweis, who has run many times for many different offices. He happens now to be a state senator. All right. So now we've got three people who think that the Senate is going to flip in about a month. We're going to get back from some of these words, and we're going to talk about, you know, more, a little bit of focus on these individual states, as Charles was beginning to do, between Mary Landrieu down in Louisiana, Kay Hagan down in North Carolina. Let's take a look at some of the top races. All of that is coming up on Beyond the Beltway with Chris Roebling sitting in for Bruce Dumont right after these words.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton Los Angeles Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
Alabama, to Austin, Texas, to Spokane, Washington, and all the way out to Portland, Oregon, where Steve is listening to us on KPAM Radio.
In Portland.
What's that?
I got a gig in Portland.
Okay. Steve, you can meet Rick Perlstein
October
live.
October 21st.
What, is there some bookstore out at Powell's, the famous Powell's independent bookstore out in Portland, Oregon?
It started in Chicago when they moved to Portland.
But there's another Powell's state
That's
here, right?
Right?
Or
That's right.
The cousin or something?
Wait, cut it out.
We got to talk to Steve. He's been waiting forever. Steve, talk to us about the IRS scandal.
Yeah, well, hey, the only thing I want to say is when you have these liberal, I'm going to say knuckleheads on, what's his, Mish or whatever it is, when he absolutely gives a total misstatement about that it was equal between the conservatives and the Democrats that were being, you know, picked on by the IRS, it was a 60-70-1. One of your guests said, hey, that's absolutely wrong. I would like some of your people and you as a host to have some better information that you can shoot down these knuckleheads and not let them get away with absolute lies.
Well, Steve, appreciate that. And I want to tell you, I did challenge our friend Rick Perlstein.
I know you
here,
did.
But,
I know you did, but I'd like to have...
No, you go ahead. Cite your source. What is your source? Because Rick's a historian and he believes in documents. Go ahead.
Well, the source has been all over the TV, all over, you know, you look at the congressional hearings and the numbers that were thrown out. I mean,
we're talking about something like 245 to about 6 or 7. Isn't that right?
Well, that's about what the dark money, the dark money ratio is, too. I mean, look, I went to a rally.
This is Rick Perlstein now speaking.
During Scott Walker's recall election.
OK.
There was an American for Prosperity rally, big Tea Party group funded by the dreaded Koch brothers, who poured hundreds of millions of dollars, and they passed out flyers.
They haven't given hundreds of millions of dollars to Americans for Prosperity,
Chris,
but
Chris,
please go ahead.
They passed out flyers saying, we're fighting for the values that we believe in because those are Michigan values. They passed it out in Wisconsin. It shows that this is a top-down organization that, and then after that American for Prosperity rally ended, across basically 50 feet away, then they had the lieutenant governor candidate for Scott Walker giving a speech. It was a total setup. They were violating IRS laws left and right. This is happening all over the place.
Are you,
why shouldn't they be investigating
that? I want to ask you.
I saw it with my own eyes.
Okay, Fair enough. Maybe you wrote a letter, or maybe you wrote
like me, or your lying eyes.
I want to ask you a question. Do you concede that the public record, such as the Obama administration has allowed us to glimpse it,
tens of thousands of pages they've given away?
I want to say, in any kind of serious litigation, that is a drop in the ocean. You know that. And now I just want to get back. Do you concede that the public record, as we know it, is about 6-7? We'll call it 10 to 225. Do you concede that?
Well, you know, the tall tree is what catches the wind, Chris.
I am taking that as a yes. Steve, you are successful. He has conceded that. And if you go to Powell's, he'll sign your book.
Thank you, brother.
The burden of Rick's argument is that they should have been denied these tax exemptions. The U.S. government and the IRS, Lois Lerner's group, did not deny them. All they did was postpone giving them an answer through three election cycles, because if they had actually denied them, that could have been contested.
Well, maybe we should have more money for enforcement then. The IRS is understaffed and underfunded.
That's the problem. Give the IRS more money for enforcement.
Honestly, I mean, would you at least concede that if it were the case, you would be concerned about it? I'm not asking you to say that it is the case, but would you concede, even as a activist liberal, would you concede?
I think as an activist liberal, and the anterior problem, the problem that is prior to this fake issue, is that there are hundreds of millions of dollars being spent in complete abrogation of the spirit and the law of the IRS code.
That is a problem, but the
and
big,
mostly on the conservative side.
That is not true. The private money in this election,
George
for
Soros
example,
is
now in this election, the money that's come in to outside groups has actually been more on the Democratic side. But I think you're making a major mistake, Rick.
So do I.
In thinking that the politicization, that there hasn't been politicization of the IRS. I think that's not correct. And B, I think that politicizing the IRS is about as serious as it gets.
I think that they're very inadequately fighting a real problem, which is that there are billionaires in this country who want to have nothing to do with honoring the spirit and letter of the IRS code.
I think that your view is exactly what Lois Lerner said after the Citizens United. It's exactly what President Obama said to the Supreme Court.
I got it from my own research.
And the IRS came right out and followed his path right into pursuing these people, and I think it's a scandal of the first order.
History will tell.
My standard, Misha, and I don't want to, you let me know when you want to jump in on this, but my standard here is goose and gander, okay? If this were, I guarantee you, if this were happening to liberal groups,
happening to liberal groups.
Hold on 1 second. If what is alleged, I'm not asserting the underlying truth because of the position that you have taken, but for the sake of conversation, if this were happening to liberal groups, 250 liberal groups to 10 conservative groups, I guarantee you I would be outraged.
And the Washington Post would be all over it.
I think that Charles would be outraged, and I think that you would be outraged.
Washington Post that editorialized in favor of the Iraq War day after day after day?
Oh, you think they're a conservative operation?
Well, look, they're liberal columnists.
You think the Washington New York Times would be?
I don't know. I'm getting back.
You mean Judith Miller, who laundered Dick Cheney's lies to the American people?
I am getting back to the civil liberties of Americans who are supposed to be able to congregate,
because
to associate, and to engage in
epidemic of violation of the spirit and the letter of the IRS code.
What's your limit then?
What's my limit?
What's your limit? I'm asking you, where do you say it doesn't
have anything?
You're looking at content. You're not looking at process.
Do you think it's appropriate that the IRS ask these organizations what prayers they say at meetings for all of their Facebook posts,
for their reading lists,
their reading lists? Do you think those are appropriate questions?
As a civil libertarian, why is that appropriate?
Do you think those are appropriate questions?
Wait a sec. If we have we have an IRS code in which you're not allowed to take partisan positions, I could see a situation where your reading list could be relevant to litigating whether this is a partisan group or not.
You would want to know my prayers before?
I didn't say your prayers. I don't know about that.
But that is on the record. That's part of the 10,000 pages that they've actually given out. Our phone number is 1-800.
They should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law, but I don't think it's very full.
We found his limit.
Yes, we found his limit.
1-800.
Do you think it's a good idea?
If we could only find Eric Holder's.
Eric Holder has no limit.
What about these top-down groups that are claiming to be grassroots and having partisan rallies that they claim are nonpartisan?
Yeah, let's talk about Holder. All right.
That's a problem?
Hold on. I think that top-downism is a problem when it comes from George Soros, but when it comes to the Kochs, it's no
George
big deal.
George Soros hasn't even been on the scene.
1-800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289. It is hour number two, and we're looking forward in a few minutes to being joined by the Illinois Republican Party chairman, who's probably saying to himself right now, I don't want to be a part of this conversation. His name is Tim Schneider. He's got two big races going on.
Yes, indeed.
He's got the Illinois gubernatorial race and then the Illinois U.S. Senate race. There are a lot of also targeted Illinois United States House of Representative races. So we'll be talking to Tim Schneider here, and he's going to join our conversation just after the bottom of the hour. But let's keep going on this thing. We were talking earlier about the Senate and about the pickups and about whether or not this is going to go Republican. And all three of you said in one form or fashion, you think it'll go Republican. Do the Democrats benefit from the announced apparent reduction in unemployment and creation of new jobs?
Absolutely.
I mean, are the Democrats able in these last 30 days to get out there and say, hold on, we've gotten through the storm and we've now got some clear sailing? President Obama's economic policies are actually working.
I agree with Lipson on this one, though. He said, he pointed out that a lot of these are discouraged workers, right, and that the numbers are deceiving, which I think they are. And I think that, you know, on Main Street, folks are still hurting, and the jobs they're getting are not adequate. Right. And I don't think it feels like the recession is over to most voters.
It's definitely going to depend on who it happens to be that you're talking to. So if you're Senator Durbin and you are talking to the African-American population on the South Side or the West Side, and you bring up jobs numbers,
you're off the stage.
It's done. Nobody is going to cheer you on, regardless of Obama being president, because a lot of African-Americans have lost faith in him as well when it comes to jobs.
Does that translate into lower turnout?
Yeah,
it does automatically.
Because in 2012, turnout in the African
Americans are all about turnout, man.
Thank you very much.
That's one of the reasons why I think in Illinois, putting that jobs bill on the plate when it comes to referendums is a really big deal. People have used it and they're going around talking throughout communities about how important it is. But the realization is these are still low wage.
The biggest issue in terms of turnout in Illinois is the fact that the long entrenched Speaker of the House, a Democrat, Mike Madigan, has a very strong ground game. And he will turn out those people for Governor Quinn, and he'll turn them, and they will vote for Durbin. It would be an enormous upset if Durbin were defeated. I think it's 50-50 right now on the gubernatorial race, but it is not 50-50 on the Senate.
Right.
I'm looking at 55-45 on the Senate.
I want my dear colleague to tell the listeners more about the referendum on the ballot.
As an example.
Minimum wage increase.
Yes.
At the end of the day, Illinois suffers, as well as the rest of the state, in the sense that you have a lot of people who are working low-wage jobs. And those low-wage jobs, people are raising entire families off of. And it's real crunch time. So having a minimum wage increase at $15 is a huge deal. A lot of people want to see that happen. It's being used in Illinois to, quite frankly, bring people to the polls.
And we are going to talk more about that after this break, when we're going to be joined by Tim Schneider joining us on the panel. Right now, we've got Charles Lipson, Amesha Cross, and Rick Perlstein. I am Chris Roebling, sitting in for the vacationing Bruce Dumont. We'll be back right after these words.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset.
shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
It's Beyond the Beltway, and I'm Chris Roebling, sitting in for Bruce Dumont. Thanks so much for joining us on the radio here. Good to be with you. We are very proud to be on XM Sirius POTUS, also BeyondTheBeltway.com on the web, and we are on WLS, our flagship station right here in Chicago, and about 50 or 60 stations around the country, Maine to California, Florida to North Dakota. Talking about the Senate, talking about the House, talking about what's going to happen just a month from now, what kind of government we're going to be looking at nationally. You guys, if we are looking at a change so that we've got Democrats in control of the Senate and Democrats in control of Republicans in control of the House and the United States Senate, what kind of final 2 years are we looking at for the presidency of Barack Obama? Rick Perlstein.
Well, he said he's going to try to govern by executive order, you know, with his pen and with his phone. And to a certain extent, there's a lot you can do that way. And considering that the Republicans are no, you know, more intransigent than they were in 2009, he should have started a long time ago.
Charles Lipson.
My view is that Barack Obama showed us which path he was going to take, which is the path that Rick said. When he made the decision after the House became Republican, not to do what Bill Clinton did, not to reach out, move to the center, try to work out deals.
Man.
You can.
There's no record of him doing so.
Rick's. I don't know whether you're objecting to the fact that he didn't do it, or you're saying he shouldn't have done it.
It's nonsense that he didn't do it. He's the most obliging of presidents when it comes to reaching out to the other side.
Hold on one second. Let's hear from Amicia Cross.
I was going to say, I think that the Bill Clinton comparison is slightly unfair, just because the Republican Party at that time looked very different than it does now. And you did not
have Newt Gingrich.
You did not
such
have
a warm and cuddly figure.
Not anyway, but you didn't have the inclusion of the Tea Party, which is extremely far right and extremist. And I think that's one major point.
That's
that
precisely.
Makes it very difficult.
You talked earlier about Kansas. Mm-hmm. There's a huge fight in Kansas.
Yeah.
Between the regular Republicans and the Tea Party Republicans. What President Obama could have decided he wanted to do was drive a wedge in the Republican Party between
totally
the more centrist, go along to get along, Midwestern
Republicans. He could have leveraged his
he didn't
honeymoon
do any of
he
that.
Didn't do that.
Point, he didn't do
lost
any of that.
Opportunity, and if our tripart here is correct and both sides do turn out to be Republican, it's going to be executive order after executive order, but there's also going to be it will affect his legacy in many ways. One, because there will be a lot of people who are extreme supporters of him who will diminish that level of support as well as that level of support for the Democratic Party as a whole.
Well, let me ask you this. If the Senate, obviously there are legacy eggs in the basket of the negotiations so-called going on with Iran. Okay.
Right.
And those negotiations, I think, are thought of by this White House as potentially a legacy element. However, if they result in something akin to a proposed treaty and the Constitution still applies, which I think those are both open questions, but if the Constitution does apply, then that treaty has to go to the United States Senate, which in this conversation, we're assuming for the sake of conversation, would be in the hands of Republicans. Where, Perlstein, where does that legacy item end up?
Well, if he comes up with a treaty and it looks good on paper and the Republicans reject it, then it's perfectly fine for his legacy. He can say, you know, I reached out and created something that would have helped world peace, whether that's true or not. I'm not going to judge. And he can say the Republicans stood in the way of peace. That's
got this big legacy issue that's now looming over him about Iraq, we made huge mistakes getting into Iraq. But by the time it was turned over to him, the administration itself said that it was stable.
Right.
Moreover, they have said, and the president himself is on record as saying he didn't want to leave any troops there. And it's a big deal.
Well, and I think the other legacy issue, obviously, is Obamacare and when he'll pull back the curtain to show American people and employers and the economy what Obamacare really is and how people will run screaming from the theater.
People will be getting their stuff coming soon.
All right. Now, talk about stuff coming soon. We've got Tim Schneider. He is Illinois Republican chairman with a bunch of nationally significant races going on in his jurisdiction. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for joining us this Sunday evening. Hello, Tim Schneider. We are hoping
Chris, to... are you there?
Yes, I am here. Are you there?
We're glad to be with you tonight.
Hey, Tim, you're joining Rick Perlstein, Amisha Cross, and Professor Charles Lipson, and we're delighted to have you on. Let me get right to it. As a state party chairman, as a Republican, what issues do you anticipate are going to influence the results, say, of your very hotly contested Illinois governor's race?
Well, the biggest thing that we have to do at this time, Chris and everyone there, is to get our vote out. I believe that if we get our message out to the people and get our voters out to the polls in November, we're going to see really great results. We know the Democrats are going to get their people out. We just have to get our people out in November. We know that hundreds of thousands of Republican voters don't vote in non-presidential years, and we need to encourage those people and get them out to vote. And we've got a really great get out to vote program in place, and we're hopefully going to get those people out to vote. And we're going to take Bruce and many of our other fine Republicans in the state of Illinois over the finish line in November.
He's Illinois Republican Chairman Tim Schneider is referring to Bruce Rauner, the Illinois Republican candidate for governor. Here is a question, Chairman Schneider, from Amisha Cross.
Mr. Schneider, thank you for being a part of this segment. One of my major questions is in terms of the demographic reach, when you're talking about reaching younger voters versus when you're talking about reaching minority voters, what is the Republican strategy or plan for the state of Illinois? Because I feel like, to an extent, Illinois, specifically with this governor's race, has a chance to inform the national Republican Party as to how to go about reaching those groups.
Well, I think the first thing we have to do is let all these demographic groups know what our message is. And our message is that of lower taxes, less wasteful spending, a booming economy, term limits, and a quality education for our kids. That's a message that transcends age, it transcends gender, it transcends ethnicity, and even transcends party, because both Republicans, Democrats, and Independents want those things that the Republican Party stands for. Now, we have not done a really great job of reaching into our minority communities and going after younger voters in the past. I think we're doing a really terrific job this year, especially our candidates. Bruce Rauner and Jim Oberweis are really working hard with the minority communities. We've got Students for Rauner, Women for Rauner. We're delving out into all the neighborhoods, and the Illinois Party's responsibility in this is to really encourage and produce an extremely broad get-out-the-vote program, trying to get people to early vote, mail in their ballots, and encourage people to just get out. And we're not leaving any stone unturned or anybody out of the picture because they haven't been classically our Republican voter, because we feel that everyone is our voter in this cycle.
All right, Chairman Schneider, here's a question from author Rick Perlstein.
Chairman, the Republicans are also facing a bit of a gender gap. The College Republican National Committee ran a commercial that I think at last count is run in six races, including Rauner's, in which women voters were kind of faced the choice of two different wedding dresses. All the women I talked to who follow politics were really kind of disgusted by this ad, reducing women to kind of, you know, brides, blushing brides shopping for a wedding dress. Are you familiar with the ad, and do you think it was a productive contribution to that goal?
I'm not familiar with the ad, but everywhere I go when I travel throughout the state of Illinois, women don't want to be, from what I've been told, singled out by certain issues. Women care about the same issues that men care about, that our minorities care about, and that's lower taxes, less wasteful spending, again, a booming economy, term limits, and a quality education for the kids. So primarily, most of the women in these families and single parent women are the people who are going out and buying the groceries and responsible for their kids' education. They're more involved in many cases than the men are, and they care deeply about these issues that the Republican Party stands for.
Here's one from Professor...
Can't react to that message, so that ad.
Chairman, here's one from Professor Lipson.
I also want to concentrate on a particular subsegment of the electorate, in this case Latinos. The Texas Republican Party has been extremely successful. In fact, some people are now predicting that in the Abbott race for governor, he could actually win a majority of the Latinos. In any event, Republicans have done very well. And in some other states, Haley Barbour and some other people in Mississippi did well with the Latino vote. On the other hand, the California Republican Party has just been in a disaster because they have been unable to bring in Latino votes. Could you tell us something about what's the difference and how do you get on the right side of that issue?
And, Chairman, you got 30 seconds, but then we're glad you're sticking with us through the break and you'll be back after. So go ahead, 30 seconds.
Okay. Well, we as Republicans believe that Latino voters are our voters. They stand for the same principles that we stand for. We haven't done a really great job in the past, but I think if we get out to them and deliver our message of those five policies and priorities.
But presumably they're saying the same thing in California, but they can't get them, and they do get them in Texas. What's the difference?
Well, when you speak with Ranked Priebus, and a lot of that has to do with, are we in those communities just 4 months before an election, or do we live and work in those communities?
Chairman, I got to interrupt. We're going to take a quick break here, but we'll be back with the chairman of the Illinois Republican Party right after these words.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton Los Angeles Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
Beyond the Beltway with Bruce Dumont, except I'm Chris Roebling sitting in for Bruce this evening, joined by Amesha Cross, by Charles Lipson, by Rick Perlstein, and on the phone with us, Illinois Republican Chairman Tim Schneider. Tim, thank you so much for coming on the program. What about turnout? Do you have a mechanism? And I not just you, I'm asking you as a representative. You are one of the 150 or so members of the Republican National Committee. What are Republicans doing to increase turnout or to spur turnout in this off-year environment?
Well, first of all, Chris, in Illinois, what we're doing is we're just laying out the opportunity before Illinois voters. The failed policies and the broken promises of the Clinton administration, we're exposing the Democrats for what they've done to Illinois. And we've got unprecedented numbers of volunteers and that are working to try and turn the state of Illinois red. They are energized. They are excited. We've got an unprecedented get out the vote program to help to try to reach these people that are low propensity, voters, but high propensity Republicans. And we're targeting these people to say, hey, listen, it's just as important to vote for governor in the off presidential year than it is to vote for your president in a presidential year. And that message is getting out there. We've seen huge turnout of the number of absentee ballots being turned in. And I think you're going to see a different picture here in November with a number of people on the Republican Party turning out for this election.
And are you looking, I mean, is that what you hear from your, excuse me, your fellow members of the RNC? Is that what's going on in Louisiana where they've got a big race, or North Carolina?
Well, I'm hearing it, yes, from all over the country. At the state party fly-ins that I'm going to, there's an unprecedented number of Republicans who are tired and fed up with their state government and the federal government. That's why you see so many of these Senate races leaning Republican now that were toss-ups. But we have a great many Republicans that are doing extremely well in U.S. Senate seats. And just right next door in Iowa, we've got a great woman, Joni Ernst, who's running, and she's doing a great job. And we're seeing that all over the country. Yeah.
All right, here's Charles Lipson.
I want to take you right over the northern border to what most of us call Wisconsin and what they call Wisconsin. to find out whether or not Scott Walker is likely to pull that one out. We hear it's a very tight race.
Well, I understand it is as well. And while my concentration is obviously the Illinois State Party, we do get tidbits from what's going on in Wisconsin, and that will be a very close race. But I think when the voters in Wisconsin realize what Scott Walker and the administration in Wisconsin under Scott Walker has done to turn that state around, I don't think they can help but vote for him and the policies that he's
presented. What do the polls look like right now?
I don't know. I don't know what the polls show. The latest I've heard from anybody is that it's a toss up at this point.
Here's Rick Perlstein,
Chairman. How are you going to fight vote fraud on Election Day?
Well, we're the only thing that the Republican Party stands for is we want to see every vote counted, and we don't want to see any.
Not every vote. Hold on a second. You're getting overboard on me. We only want every eligible vote counted. I'm the former commissioner of elections. We do not want to count ineligible votes, Rick Perlstein.
No.
And I know where you're headed with this, and we're not going to get there. Sorry.
I want to hear the chairman.
Chairman, you go ahead.
My point was just as you said. We want to have every vote counted, but we don't want to have any vote canceled by a vote that was made through someone that may have voted twice or may have not legitimately voted. So we have done some things. We've cleaned the rolls and done some things. But we're looking very hard at making sure that every vote is. We want to see everybody get out to the polls and vote in November, because we don't want to see what happened 4 years ago and have four more years of Governor Quinn's failed policies and broken promises in Illinois.
Here's Amesha Cross.
Rauner is a different looking Republican candidate in the sense that he doesn't have an offshoot that a lot of people can point to and be extremely aggressive in a way that they can a lot of the national Republicans right now. Do you think that plays into his appeal and his image for voters who don't normally vote Republican or are not registered to vote but are interested in this race?
Well, I think Bruce's message, and Bruce's, of course, he always says that he's got a voice for radio, but he's also got a face for radio as well. But that's for the voters to decide. But I don't care about what somebody looks like. I think Bruce is a marvelous candidate. He's got a great...